This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. It is Wednesday, March 15th, and I'm here with Robert Lindstrom. Bobby, how you doing tonight? This is your first time on the show with me.
It is the first time. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. We had Pierce on a few weeks ago, Graham Pierce Ewing. As I said, told everyone, the next gen of Financial Consulate coming on the air now. You know, we get Chris and Tom most of the time. But, you know, during tax season, and we also decided that, you know, it's good to just start bringing in some of the younger planners in the company. And so it's great to have you, and you have experience in the industry when you joined us. Where'd you come? What groups did you come from, Bobby?
I've been in the industry for about 6 years now. I worked for a bank in their wealth management group for most of that time and spent some time in the insurance world as well.
And then you joined us, and what did you find that you liked about the way that we operate as compared to where you've been before?
I'd say the main reason is fee-only as opposed to fee-based. That probably is the first reason that initially...
What's that mean to the average listener? What's the difference? I mean, you and I know what that means. What does it actually mean?
Well, fee-based is an advisor that can charge a fee or sell a financial product for a commission. And fee-only is only fees. There's no other compensation other than that.
So one of the other things that you seemed to like was the taxes.
I do like the taxes.
I mean, you don't like the taxes, but you like the fact that we have that ability, and you didn't normally find that.
I hadn't found that at the other places I worked, nor had I really heard about many firms doing it, but I guess most of the advisors are CPAs as well as CFPs. I'm only a CFP, so I think that's a unique area that we work.
Yeah, so, you know, doing tax planning, like we do a lot of tax returns, and when we're doing tax returns, not only do we want to get that tax return right, but we want to say, okay, look, there's a tax planning strategy here for next year, or there's a tax planning strategy for right now, and, you know, here's how we can get Roth IRAs even though your income's too high, and here's how we can get American Opportunity Credits even though, you know, your income's way too high to get the credits. Here's how we can do it. And, you know, we've got a lot of tax planning strategies that we use with our clients, and knowing the taxes helps a planner tremendously. Yet, you're right, the majority of the industry is non-tax knowledgeable. Let's just put it that way. It's not their primary focus, and that's a shame. That's a shame because that's where... probably one of the foremost things you can do for clients, whether they make a little bit of money or whether they make a lot of bit of money, you know, the tax planning. And most people think when they go to their tax preparer, when they go to TurboTax or whatever, they're doing tax planning, but there's as furthest thing from the truth. So anyway, Bobby, it's great to have you. Do you mind if I call you? You really go by Robert, don't you?
I introduce myself as Robert, but I answer to all of them. Bobby, Bob, Rob.
You know, Bobby, you know, you're a great golfer. So how could any great golfer not want to be called Bobby?
That's a good point, especially with the Masters right around the corner.
And that's right. And that's referring to Bobby Jones, probably, you know, arguably could be one of the greatest golfers. I mean, he played back in the day when they had equipment that wasn't anything like what Tiger Woods played with and so forth. And he was still dominant in the golf world.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's one of the top five ever.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It would be wonderful to see what his game would have been like if he actually had the ball and the equipment of today and the training and the technology that went into it. It would be mind-boggling because he was so darn good with hickory shafts and persimmon. I don't even know they had persimmon woods. They weren't. I guess later in his career, they had steel shafts, but he pretty much played with the hickory shaft, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So anyway, we're on an open show today, 410-922-6680. Enough of golf talk. And if you want to call in and ask a question, direct the conversation, direct us away from golf and things of that sort, 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question. And, you know, the people that call in early, they're the people that get the most attention to their question, because there usually aren't a lot of people calling in the beginning. And it's a quiet traffic day today, so it might be hard to get anybody to call in today. 410-922-6680. I guess still people are trying to dig out from the blizzard of 2017. We weren't in it, though, fortunately. We only got what? That slush really killed me. You know, I tried to plow that stuff. It just didn't plow. It was like, you know, plowing glue. You know, it just stuck to everything. And the next thing you know, you hit a brick wall, you know. So I had to bring the old snow plow out yesterday, because I've got quite a bit of territory to plow. So anyway, we're on an open show today. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question. The early people call in get the most attention to their question. So if you want to call in and ask a question, that's how to do it, 410-922-6680. And, you know, we'll just talk about a couple things here while we wait for somebody to call in and ask a question. So the Federal Reserve raised interest rates today. They went up 0.25%. Now we're at 1%. Now, you know, there was an old saying on Wall Street, 3 steps and a stumble. 3 steps and a stumble. Now, where did that come from? It came from a theory, and I can't remember what the guy's name was, and he said, whenever the Fed raises rates 3 times, the 3rd one will create the fall in the stock market. Now, you know, today, actually, the market rallied on that. That didn't mean that it would immediately happen, his theory of 3 steps and a stumble, but it just meant that it was the 3rd raise of rates by the Federal Reserve that would start to cause the slowdown, that sometime within the next month or two after it, you would see the market start to deteriorate. And I don't necessarily know that is going to be true in this market, but that's the theory that they have. And we are an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, if you want to call and ask a question. Right now I have to pause for traffic, but when we come back, I'll continue to talk about that 3 steps and a stumble if nobody calls in. Otherwise, right now, I'm going to traffic. Take getaway traffic. Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent, fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283, or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE, or visit us online at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Robert Lindstrom. Bobby, we're going to call him, though. Bobby Lindstrom. Bobby, you know music?
It's not my strong suit, no.
You're like me, then. We're like the blind leading the blind here, you know?
That's right.
We need Tom and Chris, you know, if we're going to try to guess what that song is. But he told me. Did you? Right? Smokey Robinson. What did you put that up there for? For me. Say, is that a good song? I don't even know who that is. Who is that? Yeah, all right. I hear you. So, anyway, we're on an open show tonight. 410-922-6680 if you want to call and ask a question. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. I got one caller on the line. I'll go to him and Albert in a second. But if you want to call in, plenty of lines open. 410-922-6680. We're going to go to Albert in Owings Mills. Albert, how can we help you? Albert, are you there? Well, he was there. I'll put him on hold and see if he's still there. So he seemed like he was still there, but he wasn't. So we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. We were talking about three steps and a stumble. You know, so today was the third step, third quarter percent interest rate rise. Here's one of the interesting things about three steps and a stumble is when the Fed normally did three steps, you would start to see the yield curve flatten. In other words, the lower yield interest rate started to become very much in line with the higher interest rates. That's what kills an economy. That's what the Federal Reserve does when they start to raise interest rates. They're trying to cool the economy down. And the way you do it is you bring short-term rates up equal to long-term rates. Why do you do that? Well, that's how banks make their money. When bank lends money, they're borrowing your money in their checking account or their savings account or their CDs or whatever the case may be, and they're paying some form of interest on that, especially on the CDs and other things they're lending to people, et cetera, et cetera. And so when they lend it out, they're lending at the higher rates. And it's the spread between the two that allows banks to start making money. Well, as rates start going higher on the short end, it squeezes their profit. It makes it unprofitable to lend money, and therefore banks stop lending money. That's why you do that. But, you know, it's not happening yet. You're not seeing that at this point in time where you're getting a flattening of the yield curve with the Federal Reserve raising of interest rates. So I'm sure there's going to be a step and a stumble sometime in the future. I'm not necessarily sure three steps is going to be the one, as the old saying goes. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, ask a question, direct the conversation as you like. Right now we're going to Earl in Northwest Baltimore. Earl, how can we help you?
Okay, yes. I wanted to ask you a question about the VIX, the volatility index. Could you explain it? I mean, why it's so low?
Well, when the volatility index is the amount of trading that's taking place and the swing of trades that's taking place and the amount of trades that are taking place. And so when you get fear in the market, when the market is going down and you get fear in the market, you get a lot more volume and you get a lot more volatility, the movement of price of securities during a trading session. And because we've been so lack of any kind of significant downturns in quite a while now, a good 5-6 months since we've had a really bad downturn in the market, the volatility is dissipating, because when markets are going up and they're staying steady and there's no big downturns, the volatility comes down, the amount of the trading, the price movement isn't as volatile, and the trading isn't as significant. So
even though, with politically, there's so many different things going on that, I mean,
you're talking about a different form of volatility. What the market is looking at is whether the markets are moving wildly up and down percentage wise.
Well, what do you think? Do you think it will keep on going down? I mean, do you think it will keep on going down for the next couple of months? Or?
Well, the volatility index is going to require some type of fearful market where you're getting this abrupt downturn that keeps going and going, like in 2008.
What would cause that? What would cause that now?
There are three things that cause those really, really bad markets. Number one, like we were just talking about, an inverted yield curve where short-term interest rates get above long-term interest rates and banks are unable and unwilling to lend because they can't make a profit lending money. That's number one. Number two, banks in financial difficulty like they were in 2008, where they're losing money on loans that they've made and they've got to take massive write-offs, and the only way they can bring their balance sheet into order is to stop lending. So that's number two. And the third thing is like what you've experienced in countries like Greece, where there's a sovereign crisis of the government, that the government may actually default and you have a sovereign crisis. The government itself is in trouble. So those are the three big ones that cause markets to go into major downturns for a while. You're not seeing any of those at this point in time. You know, maybe you could. Some surprise could come out of somewhere, but at this point in time, you're just not seeing it. It's not happening.
I just want to ask, can I ask you one more thing?
Yep.
So when they say that, they say in the market, they say sell in May and go away. Is that not going to be this year? Because
I
heard that many times. They say sell in May, right? And go away. That's not going to happen this year because.
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, you can have a downturn in April or May, you know, and it could be a little one. It could be a big one for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that you're not going to get a 2008, 2009 type situation
mm-hmm.
when you don't have banks in trouble, you don't have inverted yield curves, you don't have money supply declining, you don't have a sovereign crisis. But I'll tell you, you know, Trump and the Democrats, they could easily cause a sovereign crisis that gets the investors all concerned and worried, you know, if they start keep batting each other around like they do. But, you know, that's still speculative, very speculative.
Inverted yield curve, just explain that again.
An inverted yield curve is where short-term rates, like the three-month Treasury bill or the prime rate of interest or the one-year Treasury, something of that sort, short-term, is actually higher yielding, costs more to you get a higher rate of return lending money on the short end than you do if you lend for 5 or 10 years. You normally should get a low yield on short-term investments and a high yield on long-term investments. But in an inverted yield curve, it turns around and does the opposite. And that was true in 2007. And it should have been a warning to investors. You were getting 4% on money markets, and yet if you lent to 10 years, you were only getting 4% also. So you had a flat inverted yield curve at that time.
Okay, very good. You're a good teacher. Good.
All right, Earl. You take care.
Okay, bye.
I'm going to go to I didn't lose Earl on that. Can you take care, Earl? Oops, and you lost Rosalie. Oh.
Hello?
Yeah, there you are. Rosalie, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I would just like to ask your opinion. I've spent a good part of the day hopefully preparing for retirement, at least as far as my money is concerned. And when I do it by 3% of the total, I'm very upset.
You're very what?
Upset.
Oh, yeah, well, I can understand that. 3% is not a very high rate of return.
But 6% makes it livable.
Okay.
What is your opinion that would be a safe percentage?
It really depends. That's a big depends on that. It depends on how much you're willing to, what type of investments are you willing to invest in. That's probably the biggest determining factor of that is, are you going to be solely in bank accounts and CDs and bonds? Or are you willing to put 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% of your money even in the stock market?
Absolutely not.
Well, you know, but that's...
Well, it's there now, though.
Well, but you see, that's the question you have to ask yourself, Rosalie. In order to draw 6%, you're going to need a good 50, 60, 70% of your money in the stock market to have any probability that you're going to get that kind of rate of return over your life expectancy. And what I would suggest you do is find somebody who has a good market simulator retirement model that can project what would happen if you started into the market and you retired, you're in the market 60-70%, and next thing you know, you get one of those 2008 downturns. Will your portfolio still last if you hold tight through that period of time and watching how the market reacts? You know, you want to hold on. I can answer more of this, but right now I've got to take a traffic pause. You willing to do that?
Where is your office?
Hunt Valley.
Okay.
Do you want to hold on, or do you want to just take that as the answer?
Yeah, I'll hold.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll be right back. All right, go. Take it away, traffic. 75% of adults agree they could benefit from advice and answers to everyday financial questions from a professional. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications, learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com.
through TIG.com and follow us on Twitter at the FinCon for educational updates.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're going to go back to Rosalie, see if we can finish answering her question. So, Rosalie,
yes.
Your question is distribution. You're going into retirement. You've got this money. You're going to need to disperse it to yourself to keep a reasonable lifestyle. And you need about a 6% rate of return, you're thinking, in order to make it reasonable. And actually, my co-host tonight, Bobby Lindstrom, is our go-to guy for our collaborative online retirement program that does all kinds of 1,000 different simulations to figure out if a client has this kind of portfolio, that kind of portfolio, what's the probability that it's going to be successful. And would you agree, Bob, that she's going to need some equity investing if she's going to hit that goal?
I would certainly think so at 6%. The program you were talking about uses the Monte Carlo analysis and whatnot, and it's just a more dynamic.
The Monte Carlo analysis?
Yeah, you know, it is a funny name, but what it's doing is it looking at stock markets and bond markets over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's saying, okay, if you started during the beginning of a really bad bear market, or if you started at the beginning of a really good bull market, or you started in the middle of one, or the middle of a bear market, or you started toward the, you know, this stage or that stage, and it's running 1,000 different simulations saying, okay, if this market happened again, or if this one happened, or if that one happened, what's the chances of Rosalie being successful over her life? And that's what it's doing, and that's, I guess, why they call it the Monte Carlo simulation, because it's doing lots of statistical analyses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's what you need to do. You're really going to be stuck with a very low rate of return that you can draw on safely if you're going to go with a very secure portfolio over the next, I don't know, how old are you? You're like in your 60s or in your 70s?
70s.
If you're in your 70s, you know, it might work, but you're going to have to get something to do an analysis of different portfolios to see if you're going to be successful. All right?
I'll give your office a call.
Well, we'd love that. You take care. Thank you for the call, Rosalie. I'm going to Keith in Severna Park. Keith, how can we help you?
Andrew, how are you tonight?
We're doing great. And you?
Good. I just had a follow-up question. I spoke with you in January. My wife is about...
Hopefully you're not calling in to tell me that was awful advice you gave.
It was great advice.
Okay.
My wife is about 6 months older than I am. She just turned 62. And I had spoken with you because I plan on continuing to work till I'm 70. And we discussed whether she should go ahead and take her Social Security now because she hasn't worked in 25 years and doesn't plan on going back to work. And you had said that you thought that was a good idea. And she applied for it and qualified and just got her first check. But I'm just curious, what should I be looking at as far as a tax hit on the money that she'll be getting in?
So how much are you making a year? 50, 100, 200?
It's over six figures. It's over 100,000.
Okay, so 85% of whatever she's getting is going to be taxable to you. So if she's getting 10,000, you're going to have 8,500 of extra income. And if you're in the 25% tax bracket, 25% of 8,500 is what you're going to pay taxes on.
Okay, that's what I need to know.
Now, keep in mind, too, Keith, that when you turn 66, I don't know, how old are you right now?
I'm 61.
So when you turn 66, okay, well, actually, if you're 61, it's going to be like 66 in 4 months or 6 months, your full retirement age.
Yeah, I plan on waiting until 70 anyhow.
Well, I understand, but when you turn 61 and 6 months,
mm-hmm.
No, wait, he can't do that now. He can't do that
right
now because he's not over 62.
Right.
On in December 31st, 2015. Yeah, it's ridiculous the way they, you know, it's ridiculous how they change it. If you're 62 on December 31st, 2015, you can have this benefit. But Keith, if you're not, you can't do this.
I can't
do it. You know, yeah, it's ridiculous. But you should wait until 70. I think that's a good decision. Especially if you're going to continue to work.
Yeah, and then she'll get the bump up on my Social Security then.
When you pass away, if you pass away before she does, is
right.
That what you're referring to?
When I turn 70, she'll get an increase.
Oh yes, she'll get your spousal benefit.
Right.
But remember, she's only going to get half of yours based on your 66 age
right.
Social Security.
Okay.
All right?
Very good.
All right, buddy.
Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. We're on an open show tonight. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. And the retirement software program that we use that you're our go-to guy for is?
Money Guide Pro.
Money Guide Pro, and it's really an incredible program and what it can do and the simulations it can do. And if a client's concerned about long-term care and what happens if I get walloped with a big long-term care bill, you know, the program can simulate that totally for them. Or if they, well, what if a big bad bear market comes along and wipes out 50% of my portfolio? How am I going to survive? Am I going to survive? You know, I mean, it'll do an incredible amount of analysis.
It will. It's nice to do the stress test like you just talked about to see what the bad things out there can do to your chance of success. But another thing that's nice is over time, it's automatically updating based on your portfolio and your goals in retirement. And the probability of your retirement being successful from a financial standpoint is updating and allows you the chance to adjust if you need to.
And it factors in all the income taxes based on the current tax laws, be it not only the federal, but it also has projections in there to gross it up for the state. So if a client comes in and says, I want to live on $75,000 a year, it will say, okay, you're going to have $75,000 to live on, and then we've got to factor in another $18,000 because you live in Maryland and your federal taxes and your state taxes are going to be $13,000 more a year. So we really have to make sure that you can take $88,000 out. And then it starts to gross it up for inflation every year and take that out to whenever you think your end of life would be. And it tries to determine what the probability of success is based on these simulations of, you know, you being in a stock market or a bond market that is a good one or a bad one, or you're somewhere in between. You have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it's looking at all these different scenarios going back a good 100 years and saying, okay, this is your potential of success. So it's an incredible program, and it's the type of analyses that people should be doing as they head into retirement. And they either have to figure out how to do it themselves, or they should find somebody who's qualified to do it and is not looking to sell them a product of any sort, but is strictly looking to give them good qualified advice. And, you know, that's the thing that we believe is important for a professional financial advisor, to be fee only, to be independent, and to be experienced and be able to do all these different types of simulations and deal with all the taxes and so forth. So anyway, we're on an open show tonight. If you want to call and ask a question, 410-922-6680 is the way to do that. 410-922-6680. We're going to have to take our last pause of the night in a minute or two. I just wanted to see if I could get a stir out of Chris there. But how about in about 3 or 4 seconds, Chris, we take a pause. But if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, we have time for about another caller or two. 410-922-6680, and right now we're going to go to traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Perfect. You were 0 for 3 tonight. Perfect. Now, there you go. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, and obviously there's a slim crowd out there tonight. Not getting many calls, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, we probably can handle one or two more calls before the end of the show tonight. So if you want to call in and ask a question, direct the conversation as you desire, 410-922-6680.
I've got a question while we're waiting. So obviously we're doing a lot of tax returns right now for our clients.
Yep.
And reviewing many more than that. Are there any common mistakes that you're seeing this year?
This year or just in general?
I guess in general.
Yeah, you know, because keep in mind, not only do we do a lot of returns, but more importantly, we review about 50 to 100 returns a year when clients come in and, you know, do a financial physical and so forth. So if I had to say what's probably the biggest mistake I see often is not knowing who to claim as a dependent and what filing you should be claiming. So I'll give you an example. There was a couple came in recently, a guy and a gal. They lived together. The gal was in college, and he was working full-time, making a good living. They weren't married. She had very little income. He had a lot of income because she was in college. She was under the limit, so she's under $4,000 of earnings. He could have claimed her as a dependent because she was in his house, and he was providing the support of the house and so forth and providing the food and et cetera, et cetera. Clearly, she was his dependent. And because she was his dependent, because she was in college and she was getting all these tuition bills, it gave him the opportunity to get a tax credit for college tuition. It gave him the ability to get another exemption on his return, et cetera, et cetera. And it was a big number for the two of them when we amended the return for him. I mean, one of our own employees had that. Her mother was living with her. Her mother's only income was Social Security. Clearly allowed her to file her as her dependent on her return. Gave her a big extra boost in income. I mean, this is a common mistake. People have a lot of, you see a lot of parents who now have their grandchildren living with them. And their children and their grandchildren, and the child might be making $25,000-$30,000 a year and taking the kid off of their tax return. That might be the better solution, but then a lot of times the parent might say, well, you know, I should take the child. Well, that may be a wrong decision. You'd think it's the other way around. But remember, if that child is making $25,000 a year and they have a child, they may get an earned income credit, and it could end up for the family. So you've got to think all the different parallels out. You can't just say, well, you know, this person's living with me. I'm making a lot of money. I should take that child as a deduction. That's probably the biggest mistake people make. Like, for example, if you're in the AMT, your exemptions don't mean a darn thing. So you really have to think these exemptions out. Who's taking them? Why are they taking them? You know, is there somebody else that I can take that I'm not even taking? These are important questions that have to be thought out, and I can't tell you how many times they're not. And then also, you know, if you can flip yourself to the married, if you can flip yourself to head of household instead of single, that's a big, big difference. You know, like my friend who worked with us, you know, we got her mother on the return as a dependent. And then because of that, it also changed her to head of household, no longer single. And it made a huge difference. I'm going to Tim in Hamden. How can we help you, Tim?
Yes, my wife works for the post office, and we contribute at the PSP, 9% in the traditional, 10% in the Roth.
Okay.
Are we taking out enough?
Well, you know, you're saying you're doing 15% into the TSP.
Yeah, and 5% into the traditional because they match it up to $5 for a dollar.
Right.
And the Roth we're taking out. They didn't offer the Roth until like 2 years ago, so we... putting 10% in that.
Well, I think they'll match you up 5% regardless if you put it into the Roth or the traditional. They'll still match the full 5% as long as you're doing at least 5 in one of the two or a combination of the two. So, but it's not a big deal one way or the other. That's a wise decision to be putting at least 15 away, because with their 5% match, you're doing 20% of her income is going into the TSP along with the FERS, along with Social Security. I mean, that's a slam dunk there, Tim. That's fantastic. If you're doing something similar of any sort, you two should be headed to easy land by the time you're 60, 65 years of age.
Well, I'm going to be 50, and she's 44. She's been with them 13 years.
Well, then, you know, she continues to do that for the next 15 or 20 years, whatever. And if you've been saving like that also, you guys should be doing quite well.
All right. I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
All right, Tim. I mean, I got to see the numbers to be able to handle, but just based on what he's telling me, if she's been doing that for 10 years plus, that's fantastic. You know, John in Towson, how can we help you?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Good, and you?
Doing fine, thank you. Hope you are.
Yep.
Give you a quick plus and minus. Excellent point on the deduction with the girlfriend scenario.
Yep.
I have a friend of mine who had the same exact scenario, very similar, and he got a huge tax break because of it. And that was a plus. The minus to that was she got hit, the young lady, with almost a $4,000 bill. And that $4,000 bill was because she had to pay back all of the tax credits that she had received for her free health insurance through Obamacare.
Oh, okay. Well,
if you make $4,000 a year, you're not paying for health insurance. You're on Medicaid.
Well, it depends. Generally. You know, in my situation, the child was on her parents' medical plan, so it didn't matter.
So she
but
was
you're
still
absolutely
under 25.
She was under 26 years of age. 26. So you can be up to 26. Once you turn 26, they kick you off. But you're absolutely right, John, that if you're on the exchange and you're getting medical insurance credits, you have to be very careful by allowing somebody else to claim you on their tax return, because you're right, you're going to lose those credits immediately. So
well, and the ironic thing is that the friend of mine broke up. He still got to keep the tax deduction. She got the bill, and there's really nothing that they can do about it.
Well,
so that's
you
even
know,
worse.
But you see, that's why I said you have to think it out, because there are times when the lower income is the one that should be, taking the exemption because
exactly.
of things like you said, like the Affordable Care Act credit. That's a great example. But my other example that I gave, you have a child with a child living with you. The parents thinking, well, I'm in a higher income tax bracket. I ought to take the grandchild, not you. Well, if you take it away from the child may be able to get an earned income credit. And if they do, you know, man, that's the way to go, because the earned income credit is just
most
extra
likely
cash.
You have to, when you're dealing with a professional like yourself, it sounds like you almost have to do two or three tax returns in multiple ways to see which one comes out the best.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. We do that all the time. And you know, that's the ACA thing is strategy that we've used. We have a client who makes, $25,000, a husband and wife, and the ACA is paying, literally like $1,400 a month in credits to them. But believe it or not,
so they obviously have children.
No. They're just two people that are in their 60s.
And they're in their 60s. Okay.
And they're in their 60s, and the ACA is paying $1,400 a month for them, but they have a bootload of money, but we're keeping their income tax down in a big way so that the ACA can pay for it, all right? But we have to be very careful how we generate extra income for them.
Is there any asset limit on
that? No, that's the thing the Republicans kept saying to the Democrats. You've got to have some way of supporting the income and assets that people have, or people are going to take advantage of this system. And
so somebody could be worth like own a farm as an example.
Oh yeah.
And be worth $2 million.
I've got it. I've got clients like that there, John. I gotta go, we're out of time, but a great
Thank
question.
Nice
great point that you're making. Anyway, we're out of time. Bobby, great to have you tonight. I hope you come back again.
Thanks
yes?
for letting me tag along. I'll be back.
All right, that's a deal. We're out of time. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.